Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory with great warranties, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee, terrific service department that makes it all pay off at Sunbury Motors. 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Dave Jacchini in a few moments. But let's set the tone for the day. Everybody have fun tonight. Everybody Wang Chung tonight. With the Macatrillo rant of the day.
And this is going to involve some breaking news, as the NCAA is, and the Big Ten has told Michigan and the Big Ten that they are investigating possible in-person scouting by Michigan of its future opponents. So with that coming out now just a few minutes ago, it doesn't surprise me one bit, considering Jim Harbaugh's track record and the way this program is and the way this program thinks it's above everybody else in college football. Not all their fault. Some of the national media's fault, too, with the way they put him in that pedigree. But still, it's there. And quite frankly, it's pretty pathetic, because according to this report from Yahoo Sports, Ross Dellinger and Dan Wetzel, it sounds like it was from all opponents this year. So maybe it's the back half of the season, but we don't know that for sure. So it's possible they could have been in-person scouting, unless I have this wrong. You tell me if I'm wrong, Steve, at all their opponents, which include that pathetic four-game start to the season. I mean, if they were actually there at those schools to begin the season where they were 50-point favorites, and they were for whatever reason, then, I mean, that just tells you all you need to know about the integrity of Jim Harbaugh himself, which I don't think was much to begin with, and this football program in general. That they have to go so low is to send scouts to steal people's signs, which I know was not illegal to steal signs, but it's illegal to do this, of course, not only to their other opponents in the Big Ten, which includes Penn State, of course, coming up, but maybe to those four schools where they have no business being there or even playing them, for that matter, except for Rutgers, because it's obviously a conference opponent. I mean, it never stops with Jim Harbaugh and this Michigan football program. It really never does. So I hope something comes out of this, too. Plus, you still have the possible COVID violations that Jim Harbaugh is already being under wraps for. And, of course, that led to that ridiculous back and forth of how many games he was going to be suspended during the beginning of the season, of course, against those pathetic teams. So, once again, the whole thing is just Michigan trying to be its normal stuck-up self, and maybe it'll finally catch up to them.
They will do nothing about it. And here's the reason why. Notice the pattern of the NCAA, which, for the most part, dates back to the days when Jerry Tarkanian made the famous joke that they're so mad at Kentucky they put Wichita State on probation. The NCAA only punishes, for the most part, the meek, especially of late. So what do? Kansas is investigated by the FBI. The NCAA does nothing. Yeah, Bill Self, well, they tarnished my reputation. Okay, well, it is the FBI. I mean, all right. But did the NCAA do anything about it? No. North Carolina had the academic scandal. Did the NCAA do anything about it? No. After they botched the Penn State thing, when they botched it, okay, pure and simple. You notice they haven't touched Michigan State over Larry Nassar. They haven't touched Ohio State over the problems that they have, and they haven't touched Michigan either with the doctors and so forth. They haven't touched them. But James Madison makes the move from FCS to FBS. Plays Bucknell, by the way, in the opener. That's the only FCS opponent they have. Yet they aren't allowed to go to a bowl game. They aren't allowed to win the conference championship. They're not allowed to represent as the top group of five team. Again, they'll punish them because they're the meek. Where's their power? Tez Walker, long time, finally got to play, but they punished him. He's just a kid. So, that's the pattern, Matt. Tell me I'm wrong.
No, 100%.
Hey,
it's sad, really.
If it's the meek, they have no problem saying no. If it's the powerful, they have a big problem of looking into the power. Nothing will come of this. I'd be shocked if something came of it. Right? But if it was somebody else, like down the food chain, they have no problem putting the hammer down. Zero. All right. That's just me. Yeah. They can call me and tell me. That's if anybody's in the office. Most of them, I think, are working from home still for whatever reason.
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
I'm just saying. All right. Let's bring in Dave Cicchini, the head coach at Bucknell. And the aforementioned, I just mentioned that you're the one, quote, FCS opponent James Madison played this year, and you know darn well how good they are.
They're outstanding.
Yeah. Great facility, the whole deal, right on down the line. Look, you've played a tough schedule to this point, but you were able to go on the road and get that win at Cornell on Saturday. Dave, what did you see in that thing that just told you that it's building in the right direction?
Yeah, well, we'd seen a lot of glimpses, you know, playing some really good opponents, really starting with that James Madison game, you know, going toe-to-toe with them through most of the first half. But we've seen it in spurts. We haven't really seen a full, complete game of us going out there and executing the way we needed to. We were up in Ithaca against Cornell, a really tough place to play on the road. I think Bucknell was 7 wins and 30 losses prior to us going up there. So a really hostile environment, but our players came out strong, set the tone. Really, I think it started in the trenches, offensive line and defensive line controlling the line of scrimmage. It really helped us, and when the weather was bad, as it almost always is in Ithaca this time of year,
yeah.
The rain was coming down, and so the passing game was not so easy to move the ball down the field. You know, you needed a ground game that, you know, could create some explosive plays, and we were able to do that, and on our offense, and we were able to stop Cornell from doing that when they were on offense.
What has made Coleman Bennett a solid running back for you, who's averaging better than 4 yards a carry to this point?
Yeah, you know, he's had 2 great weeks back to back. You know, had I think it was 150 some yards rushing against Cornell, and you know, he's a guy who's played a lot of football for us. He's very multi-talented. He's a guy who's returned a couple of kickoffs for touchdowns. Great special teams player. Always been a threat out of the backfield to catch the football, and a lot of his big plays so far up until the past 2 weeks have come through the air, not necessarily toting the rock, but he's really kind of hit his stride the last 2 weeks, and I think the key at Cornell was his patience. You know, he is a guy who's got pretty good vision, but his thing is his acceleration. He goes 0 to 60 and real quick. I mean, he really can get on the edge, and time again against a pretty tough Cornell front seven, he was able to take the ball into the line of scrimmage, patiently let the offensive line was doing a great job of sustaining blocks. He'd see the crack on the outside, he'd hit the jets and scoot around the edge and get down the sideline. And that really was key in terms of the productive day that he had.
Look, I know it's not a great day to throw the football, but Ralph Rucker, who had walked out at one point at Oklahoma in his life, comes into your place, and he's already put together four 200-plus passing games this season. And he's got a 3-to-1 touchdown-to-interception ratio. Now, I know Saturday's not a day to throw the ball. I know that. But what have you thought about what he's done to balance your offense to this point?
Yeah, just really, really impressed. You know, he came on. You know, we don't get a lot of transfers here at Bucknell. We get about one a year, and he was able to show up in January of this year, and really has learned the offensive scheme, the pass game, really well. Plays with an awful lot of confidence, and I'm just thrilled at his production so far on Saturdays in the fall. You know, we had a good idea that it would be a gamer type of a player, and he's really shown that. He's a competitor. He goes out week in and week out and has made some really big plays. Probably the biggest difference in our offense from a year ago to this year is our ability to go out and convert, not just on third downs, but on third and long. And he is, in every single game that he's been out there for, has had at least, you know, one third and 10 plus conversion, you know, critical plays that really has dug us out of a couple of holes where we got, you know, some holds and we're you know, staring at second and 20 and we're still able to you know, overcome that type of adversity and continue our drive and continue the momentum down the field. And that's probably the single biggest thing that he's been able to do to help our team, just from a production standpoint, is his passing efficiency on third downs.
In the red zone this year, Dave, you've been 11-14 to this point. When you get down there, what kind of job have you done staying away from mistakes and getting points?
Yeah, I think the best thing that we've been able to do is the balance that we've had. You know, we've had that threat to run or throw the football. We've stayed away from becoming one-dimensional, and we've done a really good job of, you know, executing again in those critical down and distances down there. Now, we haven't been perfect. We have you know, one or two turnovers and a missed field goal, but we really have been able to go out there and you know, make those plays when they count. We haven't had a lot of, you know, our defense hasn't gotten a lot of turnovers. So for us, the majority of the time this year, you know, when we've taken possession of the football, we haven't had many short fields. Most of our drives have been 75 yards or longer. And so it's really nice when you get to the back end of that drive to have worn the opponent's defense out enough to kind of use a little bit of corny phrase, but really to impose your will against them. It's a little bit easier to do when it's the 10th or the 11th play of the drive and you've been wearing those guys down, as opposed to when it's just the third or fourth play of the drive.
But the Cornell game, I think they ended up with what, just 82 yards rushing? Does that sound right?
Yeah, it's less than 100.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about 32 carries, 82 yards rushing in that game. On a day where you have to take the run away, what did you see, especially in your front seven, as to how they played that game?
Well, first off, we weren't 100% healthy. You know, Anish Vias, our nose guard, was out for the game, so we started Cade Rooney. And so, yes, we had concerns. We knew that Cornell was going to, you know, try to run the football in the weather, and they certainly did. But we stepped up, and again, starts with the defensive line controlling that line of scrimmage. You know, good penetration by our linebackers. You know, another guy that we were missing is Blake Leak, our captain on defense, and the linebacker. He was out as well. So just really surprised at how some of the younger players, the backups, were able to be, you know, kind of thrown into the spotlight. And guys made plays. Gavin Willis, a freshman linebacker, got his first start of the year and made some key tackles. But the most, by far, the most productive day on the defensive side was Tyler Alston, our defensive end. And any time your defensive end is leading the defense in tackles on a game, you know you've had a good day defensively. You know, it's usually when it's your safety, the guy who's making that tackle 8 yards, 10 yards down the field as opposed to on the line of scrimmage. That's usually the case. But to have a defensive end lead the team in tackles is really a testament to how dominant the performance of our front seven really was on Saturday.
You also have to get yourself in a position when you have a chance to win the game is to finish. What did you think about the way your team finished?
Yeah, the fourth quarter was our most dominant quarter. You know, Ralph at quarterback went down with an ankle sprain. Nick Septenfelter stepped in and led us on two drives. One, to get a score to give ourselves an 8-point lead, and then the second one, a great 4-minute drill to run the clock down. You know, Cornell only took possession of the football two times in the fourth quarter. Anytime that can happen, it's really hard to come back when you're down. And so it really was our best quarter of the day in really all three phases of the game.
Lehigh coming in on Saturday at 1 o'clock. What's your thoughts on Lehigh to this point with Brayton Silber, quarterback?
Yeah, they've had a rocky start to their season. They've had a number of injuries, but they've shown flashes. Really not so much than how our season started out, where you see the glimpses where they are a dangerous team. They just haven't really put together a complete performance so far, but he's certainly talented. They've got some good players on offense, some good players on defense, and as you judge each of them individually, this is a team that has talent. They just haven't been able to go out and I think put their best product on the field for 60 minutes so far.
Well, get everybody out to Christie on Saturday for that 1 o'clock game. Should be a lot of fun, and see if you can make it two in a row, Dave.
Thanks, appreciate it.
Thank you, Dave Cicchini, head football coach Bucknell. We'll take a break. We'll come back more in a moment. Great to have you with us today here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
Want to work for a stable yet growing company? Got it. Want to work for a family-owned business with over 100 years' experience in taking care of customers and employees? Got it. Want to work for a leader in selling more cars and satisfying more customers? Got it. Who has all that? SMC Sunbury Motor Company is looking for technicians across all their departments. Whether you're an entry-level technician, an experienced technician, or someone looking for a career change, Sunbury Motors would love to hear from you. They're looking for technicians for their quick lane, car and light truck service, heavy truck service, body shop, and frame and alignment division. You can apply online at sunburymotors.com, in person at our North 4th Street location, or call Todd at 570-286-7746. Your new career of working on Fords, Kias, Hyundais, Western Star trucks, plus anything that fits in the door,
and some things that don't.
Join Sunbury Motors. Your new career is waiting for you.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you on this Thursday. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory with great warranties. Outstanding products. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee, which is so important to the buying experience. And a terrific service department. They need more technicians, by the way. If you want to work with some pros, go over to Sunbury Motors. They get it done all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Roundtable coming up next half hour, King final half hour. One quick note on the Michigan situation. And now let's take this on a tangent, if you don't mind. I know you'd rather just concentrate on the hate. I've got that.
I guess do tell.
But here's the tangent that I think does need to be discussed. When you are talking about TV contracts the way they are now and the money that's coming in, and I know the money is needed in other areas, but does it really take that much money? And I've advocated for this for years. I mean, these are questions that I go back when I talked to Bill O'Brien about this. So I'm going back now 11 years with Bill on the talk show where I talked about this. I said, Bill, you were in the NFL. You had a radio in the helmet of Tom Brady, and at that time was, you know, Bobby Hort, okay, as his quarterbacks. He says, you have to signal plays in. I said, how ridiculous is that to you as a head coach that dealt with a system that had radios and helmets? Why aren't there radios and helmets for offensive coordinators to directly talk to the quarterback in college football? I know it's an expense thing. I don't expect it to be a Bucknell. But my goodness, in Power 5 football, come on.
I don't disagree with that at all.
I mean, I just think that I sit there and I look at this. And this is something I've talked about for years. I mean, James was in the NFL with the Packers. And with Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers as the two quarterbacks at the time. And the coordinator always could talk to them. Now I know you need one for the defensive side as well. That's fine. And it shuts off with 15 seconds to go in the play clock, always. It's an automatic. It shuts off. And I mean, how many do you need? I mean, for Penn State, you would need 4. And then what? Pick somebody. I mean, I know you'd swap a lot of guys out on defense, but 4 on defense? That's it. You're talking about 8? Really? Now, if you're playing in a game, for example, say Penn State's playing Delaware, and Delaware doesn't have that system, then both sides have to abide by. So it's not an advantage. But when you're in the Big Ten, and everybody in the Big Ten would have it, all 18 schools, everybody in the SEC would have it, everybody in the Big 12 would have it, ACC, they'd all have it. Now, the issue is going to be, like, for example, I brought up James Madison. Would James Madison have it? I don't know. It's an expense. But if there's one school that doesn't have it, then you have to abide by the rules of the one school that doesn't have it. In other words, that game. But if both schools in the same game have the technology, use it. Instead of this archaic sign stuff all the time. It's just ridiculous. I've watched this forever. People's signs and holding up. You'll see people holding up bed sheets behind the signs so the people, in case they're being scouted or it's on film.
Or you see 5,000 different people, like the assistant coach, the quarterback, the third string, the fourth string, doing all these different hand motions where it looks like a sideshow and it's not even the game.
Well, I mean,
I always get a kick out of seeing everything.
There's always three guys.
Yeah.
I mean, there's three guys.
Right, yeah.
All right, that are doing it. And it's, like, for example, I mean, Brian Daboll's son, Christian, was one of the three guys last year. Okay? And he now works for the Giants. But, come on.
I mean, at least for Big Ten and SEC schools, you can't tell me, I mean, I get it's an expense, but you can't tell me that those schools can't afford it, especially with all the new TV revenue coming in now.
Well, that's my point. My point is you've got revenue coming in all over the place. And the ACC and the Big 12 can afford it, too. We're not talking about billions of dollars here. We're talking about radios and helmets. Okay? That's what we're talking about here. On their own frequency. I mean, come on. That's the heck of it. Let's just look this up. I don't know if it's possible. How much do NFL quarterback radios cost? Yeah, let's do that. How much does the average NFL quarterback helmet cost? All right. Let's see here. They cost between $500 and $1,000. No, it says $1,200.
Yeah, that should be pocket change for those schools.
It says here that the cost, first of all, you get the helmets anyway. The new Riddell Precision Fit, which is custom for each player, costs $1,200 plus a one-time $550 setup fee, which involves scanning your head, feeding the data in a computer, and so forth. Add in a few hundred more for the radio for the quarterback. A few hundred. A few hundred. So, talking about a few hundred dollars. I mean, the NFL has had this technology in place now for 29 years. You know that? It's the 30th season of one-way radio helmet communication. I mean, it's the 30th season of it. It is, to me, it's something I've talked about and asked about for years. Because I think it's ridiculous. You know, people trying to do signs, things like that. And people are saying, see, what happens, what they're doing is what Michigan is accused of is actually having somebody at the games using probably their phone to specifically just look at the signs being sent in. That's all the phone's doing. Then they just match it up to the tape. I mean, and again, you should have radios in the helmet. I'm sorry. It's not as great of expense as people think it is. You know, they're talking about helmet liability, warranty. For goodness sakes, I've been making this thing for years. And Grambling and Southern did it for a game. They said it worked great. I mean, there's a lot of mumbo jumbo as to why, you know, and that's what you get in most of these things. Well, blah, 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 blah. It's like, oh, just blah, blah. Just do it. Goodness sakes. If one league has been doing it for 30 seasons, like not three, like, we're not quite sure. 30 seasons. I'm sorry. That means they're pretty much in the NFL, with maybe a rare exception, have perfected it. I mean, CoachCom is a company that produces coaching headsets for most of the Division I schools. And they developed an additional helmet communication through CoachCom system. It's already in use. They used it in the Grambling Southern game, in the Bayou Classic. And guess what? It worked great. Grambling quarterback Elijah Walker said at the time, "I'm not going to lie, it was perfect. It helped me be more of a coach on the field and get the play in faster and communicate better." Bob from Hanover has something to add. Bob, always appreciate hearing from you.
Good to talk to you. My thing is, well, I graduated from Penn State in 79. I've spent my entire career in IT, information technology. And I say, why even have signals from the sideline, whether electronically or through cards? Isn't a coach's purpose to teach a player how to play their position? And what is wrong with going back to the time where the coach runs the play in, the quarterback sets it up? If he doesn't like it, he can change it at the line of scrimmage without having to look at the sideline. Isn't that the whole purpose of being a coach, is not to play the game for the quarterback or any other player, but to teach him how to look at things and let him do it on his own? I read where John Wooden in basketball pretty much did the same thing. He would not yell out instructions to the team while they were playing. I guess from time to time he did, but he let them play the game. Now they're out there, you know, trying to tell people where to stand and when to move, and it's like, let the players play. If you're that good of a coach, coach them how to play the game.
Well, you don't see that in the NFL, though, Bob. I mean, in the NFL, I mean, the days of Bart Starr and John Unitas and Terry Bradshaw, for example, calling their own plays, that's a bygone era.
What have we gained by that?
Oh, I don't know what we've gained by it, but I'm saying it's just not even done with the best of the best right now. Patrick Mahomes isn't out there calling his own plays. It's either being called by Andy Reid, or before that it was Eric Bieniemy. I mean, bygone era, really.
I guess what I'm trying to say is progress isn't always good. Sometimes we tend to think that what we have now is fixing everything. Well, when you're a kid and you're playing the sport coming up, you don't have any of that stuff. So let the kids play the game. Coach them, let them play the game. Let them go up to the next level, play the game. Coach them, let them play. I guess that has bothered me about sports in the past 10, 20 years, or maybe even more than that. But that's just me.
Well, no, and I understand where you're coming from. I mean, because, look, you know, the other part, too, is the guys like Unitas and Starr and whomever it happened to be back in that day, Bill Nelson, Frank Ryan, you had to have a real feel for the game to be the quarterback out there. Well, you still have to have a feel for the game, but this also takes one element off the plate, and you also only have the 40 seconds. And so, look, you know, it's just one less thing for them to, quote, worry about it and let them play. And for the coaches, they've got so much on the line here. I'm sure they feel like they need to have as much control as possible. And on the college level, you're trying to have as much control as possible with 18 to 23-year-olds.
Oh, yeah, I know, but it's... I don't know.
Had an 18 to 23-year-old. Come on, you know.
Yeah? Oh, I know. And I'm 66, and my wife has trouble with my thinking sometimes.
That just means you're in an average household.
Now, I just think that with electronics, and I'm an IT guy. I know all about it. At some point, we've stepped way over the line, and we're making things more complicated and more expensive than they have to be. But now that you have that, you have to maintain the equipment. You probably have one or two people on the team that keeps everything working, two people you probably wouldn't have to have that would decrease the cost of what it is to run a college football team. it's just like things just escalate and they get out of control. That's my opinion. But
well, see, if nobody else was doing this,
well, you make a rule against it.
Right, I'm saying, but if nobody else was doing this, I'm talking about at any level, I'd be like, oh, okay, well, I'd be like, all right, I'd be really with you on this, Bob. But the fact that the NFL has done this now for 30 seasons, that means it's already tested, tried, and true, and it works. And I think you're trying to avoid, above all, to me, delay of game penalties. I think that's a big part of it. And people don't like watching delay of game penalties. They want to see action.
Yeah. I tell you what, it personally drives me nuts to see the whole team line up for their offensive scheme, and then 10 seconds before, they all sort of step up and look over to the sideline. I mean, let the quarterback coach the game.
Well, and that's, again, see, that's the part about trying in the chess match. Now, see, with the radio helmet, okay, you'd still have to look over. You want to know why?
Yeah.
Because it shuts off with 15 seconds to go on the play clock.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So that's part of it. But look, I remember the days, I remember NFL championship game, the Ice Bowl. I think it was the Ice Bowl. The Packers took a 14-0 lead in that game, and it was a third down and one, and Starr went play action, and I think he had Boyd Dowler down the middle for a touchdown on a 40 or 50-yard play. Right? And it's that kind of play call. You go, hey, wow, what a play call that was. The execution was great, but the play call was tremendous, and Starr's the one that made the call.
Yeah.
And then there was the one late in the game where Starr snuck it in.
Yeah.
He didn't tell anybody else, except he told Lombardi. And he told Lombardi, he says, I think we can run the quarterback sneak. He said, I think Kramer can get Pugh. And Lombardi said, well, just run the damn thing and let's get the hell out of here.
I thought there's an interesting story I had read about Johnny Unitas when Don Shula was his coach. And Don started running the kicking team out onto the field to kick the field goal.
Oh, yeah.
And they said John Unitas took two steps to the sideline, put his hands up, and the whole team turned around and went off back to the bench, and they ran a play and scored a touchdown. But that didn't make Shula too happy, I don't think. But
no, I don't know. I would doubt sincerely that it made him happy. So, yeah.
And John, and Unitas would, I saw him in a couple of interviews where he said, the reason I like to call million plays, he says, when I step behind the center, I look at the eyes of the guys that are coming after me, and I know who's sucking wind and who's not, and I know where to go.
Right. No, well, exactly. Now, do quarterbacks have the ability to change up? Yeah. And to get out of something? Yeah, they do have that ability. I mean, Drew Aller has that ability. I mean, he does.
And I'm sure Brady probably called a lot of his own plays along the way. Once it got out onto the field, he probably changed quite a few things
up. What happens is that they'll get something and the plays have options off it.
Yeah.
And then the quarterback can pick the option. I mean, so there are actually options off the play. But, the cost per team would be about, in today's money, is about $30,000 per team.
Yeah. Yeah, that I don't know.
I just looked it up.
Yeah.
It's about $30,000 in today's money, $30,000 per team. 20 years ago it was $20,000. Now it's $30,000. I think they can handle the cost.
And if a guy gets hit in the head and his radio goes out, do they give him a new helmet? Is that what they do?
Yes. 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 They have spare helmets with the radios in it. Yep.
Very interesting.
Yeah. But Bob, great point. I remember the days of Unitas too.
I remember Joe used to just whisper into a lineman's ear and run him out on the field with the play.
Yeah.
So things have changed quite a bit.
Yeah, well, remember Paul Brown was the original one that put radios in helmets, was told he couldn't do it, so he alternated guards bringing in plays.
Oh, okay. Is that how that happened?
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to me.
Hey, always a pleasure, Bob. Thank you for listening. We'll come back. High School Roundtable next half hour. King final half hour. Are you done with rants or you got another one?
You never know, but right now I think I'm pretty good. Unless I can rip on Jim Harbaugh some more, I have never have an issue with that.
He speaks highly of you. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay.